Sorry about that. I had to deal with a variety of issues. People who were going to lose muscle, lose weight, people who were going to be fatigued, people who were going to have internally a lot of inflammation, a lot of oxidative stress, people who were just breaking down. I made an analogy about 15 years ago that the cancer patient and the athlete are almost identical. And the people that I was working for at the time thought I was nuts. I said, what are you talking about? The stress of exercise, or exercise as a stressor, is really not much different than the stress of disease at the cellular level. What I got to see, and what we did to sponsor trials and prove the point, was that when one goes through strenuous activity, they break down muscle, produce oxidative stress, inflammation, fatigue, and their immune system drops. Identical to what I was dealing with in the medical clinical area. So much so that we went out to prove our point. We went to Rutgers University at the time, took the Division I football and soccer team, so I looked at the strength and endurance athlete, and put it to the test. Measured all the things that we would measure in an oncology patient, applied certain nutrients versus what they were getting in the collegiate marketplace, Gatorade, Gatorade shakes, things of that nature. And lo and behold, what we found was exactly what I was looking at, and that is, thank you, that when one goes through strenuous activity, all of these components are in place. We were running out on the field, taking blood work from them in the middle of their practices, and we took them preseason when we knew they were going to get the daylights beat out of them. And we saw that the stress of exercise is like the stress of any other condition and any other debilitating disease. So it dawned on me. At that time, I was really working in the clinical area, and my son discovered a gym and discovered bodybuilding.com and discovered all the forums with all the misinformation and kept hitting me with, but Dad, am I supposed to take this? And Dad, they said I should take this. And then I had to question who they were and teach them that there's a bunch of people in a basement answering all these questions and just working for companies. And then I had to take them, as Ed said, to the store and show them all the bad products that are out there and teach them about the bad things. And it dawned on me, this was pervasive amongst the young kids. On top of that, we were dealing with a bigger issue, which I'll get to in a second. And everything that I will talk about tonight is in the book that I wrote, The Misled Athlete. And Joe Theismann wrote the foreword to the book. For those of you who don't know Joe, he's a world-class athlete, NFL Super Bowl champion. But more importantly, he's very active in the high school athletic association that was governing things for the high school athlete, very concerned about the fact that the rise of steroid use at the high school level was significant enough for us to really get on the bandwagon and try to teach people out there. It is pervasive. You name the sport, and banned substances are there. I don't care what sport it is. And we've all heard the stories, we've all heard the lies, what we haven't heard is everything out there. Because from tennis on down, or tennis on up, however you want to look at it, the competitive analysis here is such that it is mind-boggling. This is a quote from a U.S. Olympic Committee physician who did an informal survey amongst athletes at one of the Olympics. He said more than half of these people would be willing to continue to take a banned substance knowing that it would be fatal, provided it would get them a medal. I understand it. The competitive edge, it's significant. When you get to this kind of class of athlete, what can you do for them? What can you do for them that's not really going to hurt them? And then you have to deal with the athletes where there's not much of a choice. If they want to compete, they have no choice. This was the case with Lance Armstrong. This is the case of a lot of football players who want to work the line, and if they're not doing steroids, I don't know how they are able to compete. Nevertheless, I'm concerned about teaching the young kids now and getting the word out. And more importantly, I'm concerned about helping people make good choices, that there are alternatives, that there are things you can do nutritionally, diet, and supplements that can give you an edge. Because as I opened up with before, the edge to me and the mantra for me is, if you want to perform better, you must recover better. If you're getting injured and you are at a cellular level every time you do strenuous activity, talking about at least 80% of the target heart range for extended periods of time, you're doing damage to your body. It's a good damage, and you start to adapt, most of you. And at certain periods of time, if you're not at a good nutritional status, it will affect you, depending upon your age, your training, your ability to rest, which is another problem amongst athletes. So a lot with the NBA, and working with athletes, and a lot of the coaches were shaking their heads. We got to get this guy out of the gym. We got to get him off the court. He's working too hard. He's overtraining, and overtraining leads to injury, and so forth and so on. Nevertheless, while everybody hears about the good things, the home runs and the bicycle the tours that were won and what have you, you don't hear about the predominant bad things that occur. And they're rampant, from endocrine disorders, cardiovascular problems, you know, brain function changes, you know, the roid rage you hear about, it's very real, aggression to depression, musculoskeletal. Interesting enough, some of these steroids actually, over long periods of time, can cause more damage to the joint and joint tissue area, leading to increased susceptibility to injury. Other reported side effects: fatty liver, prostate, cancer growth. Look, steroids cause an abnormal growth of muscle tissue. Unfortunately, it's indiscriminate. It's not just building muscle. So any other cell that wants to abnormally grow is going to grow even faster. And basically that's what cancer is, abnormal growth of cells. So those, especially the older athlete, whoever, or those who have a predisposition to especially the hormonally dependent cancers, run that risk of increasing their risk of cancer. And so forth and so on. Kidney failure, impotence, it's out there. It's all over the place. So you go out into the major chains that are focused their attention on sports nutrition products. And the marketplace is littered with misguided formulas, either quick pick-me-ups loaded with stimulants. And I'm not just talking about caffeine. I'm talking about stimulants that are on the banned substance list for the U.S. Olympic Committee, to WADA, you name it. A lot of the companies have been outed by the FDA, and I get those reports every month, and you see them that many of the products in the marketplace are tainted. Another misguided idea was the fact that load your body up with protein. All the formulas on the marketplace used to emphasize protein, protein. The number of the game went from 20 grams, 30 grams, 40 grams, 50, 70 gram protein per serving, which is absurd. And as you'll learn tonight, that's not what we really need to focus on. So you had misguided formulas of excess protein, stimulant overload, low quality calories, no clinical proof of benefit, but a lot of hype. A lot of hype that's been promoted by the company and now through websites that reach all the young kids. So the importance of nutrition to the athlete is physical recovery, injury prevention, overall health and well-being. When you get all that underway and in place, you will improve your performance. Again, the mantra being recover better, perform better, whether you're endurance, strength, or speed athlete. The question was, outside of the chains that sold these products, were there products in your stores that existed? And the answer is yes. there have been a lot of good data on things like arginine and citrulline and branched chain amino acids, whey protein, glutamine, what have you. So there were a lot of interesting products, and then when you look at the other aspects of what happens to the athlete, there are a lot of good antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, things to quell the damage that was done for the athlete. People just didn't know how to put this all together, and they were being certainly swayed by companies promoting those products that were just about stimulants and protein. Most important thing we learn here today, it's not just about building muscle. I had the great fortune of working with the greatest athletes, and they weren't on any team. They were with our U.S. military. I've been at all the bases. I've worked with the Rangers, to the SEALs, and what they were trying to do at the time when I got to visit the bases and do my talks and actually put products on the table for them, was they were adopting the soldier as athlete program. The commanders used to tell me, we know the first guys who are going to drop in tours of duty, all these big muscular guys. It's not about muscle. These guys weren't athletic. And so what they did at the time for this program is they brought in all the strength conditioning, four strength conditioning coaches from the NFL, and they adopted a program of training them to be athletes, not necessarily just bodybuilding. I'm not saying muscle's not important. I'm saying the emphasis about it takes away a lot from being athletic and also takes away a lot from performance. What are the major concerns that I've witnessed that you find in the literature when you look at cancer patients? The first thing is a fancy name, mitochondrial dysfunction. The mitochondria are the batteries in your cell. These are the things that help produce energy to keep that cell going so that muscle could do more work. So dysfunction of the mitochondria is found in a variety of different cancers: liver, kidney, colon, breast, gastric, esophageal, lung cancer. It's an aspect of treatment and the disease. Oxidative stress, we've heard a lot about it and why we talk about antioxidants being important. The pathophysiology of most cancers is this high level of oxidative stress where the cells can't deal with this internal stress. Wasting. There are studies where you can tube feed patients thousands of calories, they're still going to lose muscle. Why? Inflammatory markers. This particular disease, we see a lot of inflammation. When these inflammatory markers are around, they burn muscle. They burn up tissue. So you can give all the calories you want. It's not just the function of protein and calories. You got to get rid of the inflammation. And then finally, obviously, in the college patient, you have immune suppression, something you've got to deal with. Well, what do we find out when we look at the literature in the athlete? We find the exact same things. Damage done to the battery in your cell, the mitochondria, is due to the buildup of these free radicals and things like lactic acid that accumulate after strenuous activity. Oxidative stress. Every time you breathe in oxygen, you form oxidants. And the cell, through its own internal antioxidant, called one of them being superoxide dismutase, kind of splits it apart and helps you use oxygen more efficiently. So the athlete, taking in tons of oxygen, producing a lot of free radicals, those systems have got to be primed big time in order for them to deal with that. Otherwise, that buildup of oxidants slows down the muscle, damages the muscle, produces more inflammation. Poor immune response, totally underestimated and neglected in the athlete. The data is very clear, especially in endurance athletes. Longer than 1 hour of activity at maximal heart rate, and you look at people who have higher rates of upper respiratory tract infections, and that's been reported in the literature. So we know that stress of strenuous activity can drop your immune response transiently. And then finally, muscle wasting. Again, I say finally and I leave it last because that's what we've been hearing about. Oh, you break down muscle. Yes, I know you break down muscle, but these other things are very important, and if we don't address them, just giving me protein and things to stimulate protein and muscle are not going to make that athlete any better or help them perform better. So the idea here, again, for me, and the focus of what I've written, is to treat the athlete as a patient because of the exercise of being a stressor to the body. Since muscle is what everybody wants to hear about, let's briefly talk about it before I get to these other important areas. There are a variety of things out there in the marketplace. I mentioned a few of them. Branched chain amino acids, and this is outside of just taking in protein. What can help an athlete? Well, branched chain amino acids happen to be used in a lot of hospital feedings. Post-op feedings help them get better and recover quicker. But if you could see the red highlights here, they are critical for muscle production. And these are select amino acids that are used by the muscle for fuel. We always thought that the muscle only uses sugar, carbohydrates, for fuel. Well, selectively, it uses fats, but it also uses branched chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, and valine. And out of the three, today we know that leucine is the major player, the one that stimulates muscle protein growth the greatest out of all three. But it's nice to have all three around. And what we did for Blue Bonnet, we did a branched chain amino acid with a 4-1-1 ratio, or four times as much leucine to isoleucine and valine. And before and after exercise, branched chain amino acids will significantly reduce the breakdown of muscle commonly seen after that activity. That's been reported in the literature. So branched chains are a good thing. Glutamine, another important amino acid that's used a lot in hospital feedings. It's concentrated in muscle tissue. It's stored and released during stress. So the stress of exercise is going to release and break down more glutamine, making it conditionally essential. So during and after intense activity, glutamine stores are significantly depleted and warrant replenishment. Arginine, we've heard a lot about it for a number of reasons. It's conditionally essential. It is an important factor to increase growth hormone in the body. And growth hormone is important to build tissue when it's damaged. It's involved in the synthesis of creatine, which I'll talk about in a second, and it helps to augment nitric oxide. We've heard a lot about nitric oxide, especially in the pre-workout formulas, nitric oxide boosters. Nitric oxide is a chemical in the body. It's an important neurotransmitter too. But what it does is it vasodilates. It opens up the blood vessels so that you can flood in more nutrients and energy into muscle much more efficiently. The problem with arginine is if you give too much, you can get nauseous. The data on arginine raising nitric oxide is in the 15 to 30 grams, 15 to 30,000 milligrams. If you tried to do that orally, you'd be vomiting. So a lot of those studies were done through tube feeding or injection, what have you. So by itself, it's not very good as well because there's an enzyme in the body, arginase, which breaks down arginine and it doesn't become very efficient. Nevertheless, small amounts of arginine can influence growth hormone, whether you have growth hormone deficient children or you're using it for exercise and repair. Creatine, the most misunderstood and misinformed nutrient on the marketplace when it comes to sports. A lot of misinformation out there. It's dangerous, you're going to get kidney damage, this and the other. Absolutely false, 100%. No data to even think of that. There are a few hundred studies published on creatine right now. It's been shown and proven to enhance muscle strength, muscle mass, and recovery. The safety has been well established, does not cause kidney problems unless you have a kidney problem. And if you do, any protein for that matter, and any amino acid is going to be a problem for you. Because all amino acids and all protein has nitrogen, and the kidney's got to remove it to form urine. And so it's not inherently anything special about creatine that's going to cause any kidney problems. It's a big lie. Nevertheless, it's become so important that creatine is now used, and it's been in a couple of published papers now, in neurological diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS. Why? One of the hallmarks of neurological diseases is mitochondrial failure in the brain cells. Mitochondria, the battery in the cell, produces energy. Defective. They die out real easily in neurological diseases. The cell, if it can't produce energy here, it can't defend itself. If it can't defend itself, it dies off quickly. And we see that as one of the hallmarks of neurological diseases. And now they're getting good results using creatine, a couple of other players like coenzyme Q10, ubiquinol, what have you, and it's that important. Creatine does work, and it works well. Yes?
There's different forms of creatine.
Right.
Some are better absorbed than others.
98% of the, probably more than 98, but 98% of the studies that have been published on the safety and efficacy of creatine in muscle strength, mass recovery, and even in performance have all been done with monohydrate. All these others, I'd love to see a side-by-side comparative study published in a reputable journal, not through somebody's website that's selling the ethyl esters or what have you. And I'm not saying that they are bad, these other forms. Theoretically, they sound better and they should work, and maybe they are. I just like to see the data. I feel much better if I have to work with a client, whether it be a high-profile client or a patient with MS. I can't rest at night unless I know I said something that's backed up with data. So they may be very good. I just don't know that, and I can't tell you. Yes, in this particular study, it shows it's better absorbed. And even if it's better absorbed, what does that mean? Did it work any better to produce more muscle strength, mass, or recovery than a monohydrate form?
I've done my own case study.
And that's fine.
Myself,
yeah.
I know which one worked best for me.
Yeah.
That's just me.
And you bring up an important point. An important point that I've been doing in my practice for 30 years now. Everybody is individual. Everybody responds differently to different things. And that's great that you found what works for you, and I'm all for that. I would love to see more. I'd love to see more studies, and I think that will happen. It's just a matter of time. It will happen. You'll see more studies. And then we finally, after all these amino acids, we come to intact protein. And I get, well, what about soy? What about the plant proteins? What about casein? What about this? What about egg protein? There are a lot of good proteins out there, and you can use a variety of them out there. But again, being very, very data-driven, I look at what's been done in cancer patients, published studies, to the predominant studies that have been done in athletes, to the comparative studies of whey up against soy, casein, egg. Hands down, whey protein stimulates muscle growth better than any other protein. Now, again, I'm not saying you can't do well with other proteins. If I'm working with an elite athlete who's trying for the edge, I go to whey. If I'm working with people who have digestive problems, I go to whey because it's fast-acting and it breaks down its amino acid profile much easier. But then I look at three other things that whey has that these other amino acids, that these other proteins don't have. Number one, whey is high in cysteine, an amino acid that stimulates glutathione. Glutathione is an internal antioxidant, one inside the cell. Without it, you're dead. So I like that. Whey protein is very high in branched chain amino acids. As we saw before, our selective amino acids that the muscle uses for growth as well as for energy. Third, whey protein is the only protein that has immunopeptides. These are immune-supporting compounds you don't see in any other protein. So now I see whey as just not important for athletes, in terms of recovery and muscle growth, but also to help support immunity. As I talked about, this transient immune challenge and suppression that we see after strenuous activity. Now, I could talk about elite athletes and strenuous activity, and then I could talk about the older athlete and people looking to take care of themselves. The older you are, the less able you are to recover better and deal with the stressors. So, someone who's older is going to do much better with whey as an immune supportive nutrient and building lean muscle more efficiently than other proteins. Yeah.
You have a preference of isolate to concentrate?
They're both equal in terms of their ability to stimulate muscle protein synthesis. From a macronutrient point of view, the concentrate has a little bit more fat and it has some lactose in it. Isolate is literally fat-free and it's literally lactose-free. So if you're not lactose intolerant, there's no big deal. Then I look at the organoleptic properties, taste, mouth texture, feel. Whey protein isolate is bland and watery. If you just put it in water, which I do, I like, and you taste it, and it's, there's no taste to it, and it's very watery. No texture to it. Concentrate, because of a little bit more fat, has a little bit nice texture to it. But to me, none of that matters to me. I go with low fat, no lactose product. But they both can do what they do. They both have the aminopeptides. They're both high in branched chain. They both have the high amounts of L-cysteine. So it's just a matter of preference now.
Is the isolate more denatured than the concentrate?
No. The denaturing has nothing to do with isolate versus concentrate. Denaturing, what he's referring to, is that when you produce these proteins, there's two ways. One is through cheese processing, where heat supplied and you denature a protein. What does that mean? A protein is long lengths of chains of amino acids. And that chain length, the way it's configured, has a certain function. When you apply heat, the chain length changes. And when the chain length changes, the function changes. One of the functions is it can decrease the activity of these immune peptides. And that's why I like to use undenatured, and that's why Blue Bonnet uses only undenatured protein. Cold processed, there's no heat applied. Yeah. But as you can see, this study here in the Journal of Applied Physiology back in September 2009, the ingestion of whey, casein, or soy isolate effects on muscle protein synthesis at rest and following resistance exercise in young men. Bang, hands down, whey stimulates the greatest rise. This is one of many papers. If you're milk intolerant, you can't have it. And you're going to have to go with the proteins, plant proteins. The correct protein dosing. I always show, a funny cartoon, but it's a numbers game out there. Bottom line, here's data from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, January 2009, ingested protein dose response to muscle and muscle synthesis after resistance exercise in young men. What they found out here, and what many papers have reported, is that after exercise, you really only need about 20 to 30 grams of protein to act as a recovery beverage. Now, hold it for the guys out there who are going to challenge me on this. A 6 foot, 280 pound football player needs more protein than this little scrawny guy. Hands down. I'm not talking about total protein intake for the day. I'm talking about recovery beverage that you need after strenuous activity. It really doesn't have to go to the level that you need to or want to go to 60, 70, 80 grams of protein. The data is pretty clear. Okay, so if you're that tall and that much mass, you can go to 30, 40 grams far. But anything over that, it actually has a negative and irreversible effect. It increases oxidation. It's causing more oxidation in the body. So as a post-recovery meal, I would say don't get fooled by the numbers game. And that's completely different than what your total protein intake needs are for the day, which is going to be greater in the bigger guy. But it's important because out in the field, you know, my son was coming and showing me these tubs of, you know, 70 grams of protein a serving, and I knew that, A, you don't need that much to really do what you have to do. B, protein is not going to be the answer to help build protein only, as you'll see later. And C, I knew that level is just going to do more damage because it's more nitrogen that this kidney has to release, remove at a period of time, that half-hour window after exercise, that he's trying to recover, and you're putting more insult to injury. It's really not necessary. The other players, other than the muscle protein synthesizers, are antioxidants. If you look at this pyramid, you'll see the top three gray antioxidants: SOD, catalase, glutathione. These are the ones that you find inside every cell of your body. There's the Army, Navy, Marines in the cell. Your cell, every second of the day, is trying to defend itself from damage. Damage from stress, damage from polluted air, damage from your polluted diet, damage from anger, damage from, you know, any stressful condition that you're, from exercise to the workplace. Damage from the foods that you eat, not the bad foods, but the metabolites, the byproducts of metabolism, produces noxious agents. Without the Army, Navy, Marines here, you will die. These are the most important antioxidants. All the other ones down here, from vitamin C, they're all important. All of those, but they're the external ones. And they become important players, but I've got to try to stimulate those top players. We found out that whey, because of L-cysteine, can stimulate glutathione. There are other important players that do the affect SOD. One of them is a product called glycidin. It's a special form of SOD. All the data in the past on SOD, and it's rich in the medical literature, is done with injection. From heart disease to neurological diseases to arthritic conditions. Really good data out there, but you had to inject it because you couldn't take it orally. There is a company in Europe that's got worldwide patented rights on the first orally deliverable form of SOD. Now, why do I focus on SOD here? I talked to you about before, every time you breathe in oxygen, you produce oxidants. And since the athlete is huffing and puffing and they're breathing in a lot of oxygen, well, what happens when you breathe in a lot of that oxygen? Oxygen combines to itself to become superoxide. It's one of the deadliest free radicals that can destroy your cells. That's why the cell produces SOD, superoxide dismutase. Dismutase pulls away superoxide to release the oxygen so you can use the oxygen. And so glycidin, one of the compounds that we have as an antioxidant, is a primary player to stimulate SOD. Interestingly enough, it stimulates catalase and glutathione a bit as well. And that's what I like to add in the arsenal. Because while I'm trying to help this person rebuild their muscle, thinking that protein's the only thing, I got to reduce the oxidants because they're damaging the muscle. I got to reduce the inflammation. That's damaging the muscle. If I'm not taking care of those other things, I'm not really helping the person all that much. And then finally, immune support. I can make the case for every vitamin from A to zinc has a part to play in your immune system. There's some important other players out there as well. We've heard a lot about vitamin D. You know, vitamin D also has been traditionally known to help build bone. Well, I can't tell you the amount of literature coming out on vitamin D in the past 10 years on being being an anti-cancer agent to stimulating immunity. So much so, we now have identified that every single cell of your body has a vitamin D receptor. And if that receptor is not taking in vitamin D, it's not turning on the cell's ability to turn on immunity very well. Why do we get sicker in the winter time? Well, vitamin D traditionally was known to, you can get it very easily by your exposure to the sun. Now we're worried about skin cancer, so we're putting on sunscreens. You're not producing much. The winter time comes, you're not hardly getting any ultraviolet light at all. Your vitamin D levels significantly drop. Your immune response is at its worst. That's why people get sicker in the winter time. One of the reasons. Vitamin D is critical for immune response. Immune peptides, I talked about whey being immunosupportive. You have mushroom extracts, glutamine has a dual role here, nucleotides, probiotics, the healthy bacteria that line from your mouth to your colon. These bacteria are not there just for digestive purposes. They're there to also help support immune function by talking to the rest of the body in a variety of ways. So there are a lot of things to add into the protocol besides giving them whey protein after exercise. I need some antioxidants in there. I need some things to help support immunity as well. And then I need things to lower inflammation. Omega-3 fatty acids work very well. Turmeric, curcumin works very well. Vitamin D having a dual role here to also be an anti-inflammatory agent. 5-loxin, a compound found in Boswellia, an Indian Ayurvedic herb. Rhodiola, phosphatidylserine. There's a number of really good anti-inflammatory natural compounds that would work very well in a formula for post-recovery. And then finally, the energy drivers. Here, I'm not just looking at stimulation. I can tell you right now that there's a tremendous amount of studies on caffeine improving performance at a certain level. We'll get to that in a second. But now I'm also talking about, since the cells are being bombarded with so much damage from exercise and the stressors it produces, inflammation, oxidative stress, the cell's ability to produce energy starts to slow down. That's why people get fatigued also, not just about lactic acid. Coenzyme Q10, nucleotides, ribose, carnitine, branched chain amino acids, SOD, they all play a very important role in helping the cell produce energy, not acting as a stimulant. They're supporting the cell's capability of producing energy naturally and would make a nice addition to formulations for energy production. Putting this all together, these are the two studies I was involved with that we supported. First one was published in the Journal of Strength Conditioning Research, and this was done in Division I soccer players. And we took a formula that had all these players in it, good intact protein, antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, energy drivers. And what did we find? We went up against the leading formula, and as you can see here, that the leading formula, and here we looked at changes in resting CK. CK stands for creatine, well, CK is a measurement of muscle breakdown. When you see it high after exercise, the muscle is breaking down fairly well. When we put them on this multi-nutrient formula, compared to the Gatorade's Nutrition Performance Shake, which is a high-protein calorie shake with a lot of sugar and junk, you could see that the players who took the leading formula had significantly higher levels of muscle breakdown markers than the people taking this formula that we put together. VO2 max, the amount of oxygen you can utilize efficiently, a measurement of endurance. You could see that the multi-nutrient formula, before they started the training and after, they increased their ability to utilize oxygen efficiently, where the leading formula pretty much stayed almost the same, slight increase. Fancy name, 8-isoprostanes. It's a marker for oxidative stress. The people that were placed on the multi-nutrient formula pre versus post actually decreased the amount of oxidative stress markers, and the leading formula actually increased, what we typically find in athletes, that it increases. Have all these markers around, you're damaging more muscle, may be related very much to what we saw on the previous slide of how these people had more muscle breakdown. This was impressive to Rutgers. This was in the Human Performance Lab, Sports Medicine Department. They said, wow, this was nice, and we got it published. What could you do for the strength athlete? I said, give me your Division I football team. And that's what we did. This one was published in the Journal of Comparative Exercise Physiology back in September 2009. Here we went a little bit further. We looked at pretty much similar things that we saw in the endurance athlete, but then we took blood and we looked at hormonal changes as well. What did we find? First of all, in terms of body composition, the multinutrient formula actually led to less body fat pre and post over time, whereas the one loaded with sugar increased body fat. It was pretty interesting. That's nice, but let's go further. Changes in testosterone to cortisol ratio. Testosterone, an anabolic hormone, helps build muscle. Cortisol, an inflammatory hormone marker that gets raised naturally and normally after exercise, and it's important that it gets raised because it helps then the body adapt. It triggers off certain messengers to take the body into a certain phase to help now recover. So you need that elevated to trigger this recovery naturally inside. But when it stays elevated, you start to see the inflammation and the oxidative stress of cortisol. It is inflammatory, also related to breaking down muscle. So the idea is, how do we change testosterone to cortisol ratio? People who took the multinutrient formula, they actually raised the ratio, raised more testosterone, lower cortisol. Leading formula actually went reverse. They decreased their testosterone, raised their cortisol levels. And again, elevated testosterone is more anabolic, building. Cortisol is more catabolic, breaking down. So we saw for the first time some hormonal changes that we were able to influence with just a nutritional product. Nothing else changed in the people. Changes in peak power. There was a significant increase in peak power by Wingate testing and a whole variety of testing that was done, whereas the leading formula almost stayed the same. Cortisol response, again, a normal, healthy response, but the faster you get cortisol down, the faster you're going to recover, as opposed to the leading formula where elevated cortisol stayed around much longer. Changes in the marker for muscle breakdown, CK, again, really, really significant changes where the multinutrient group had very little muscle breakdown compared to the leading formula. So, what we did was we actually went out and looked at these people as patients. They were hit with a stressor, not a disease, but a stressor nonetheless, that triggered off very similar changes in inflammatory markers, oxidative stress markers, hormonal changes, muscle breakdown markers that I see identically in cancer patients that are really at stage 3 and 4 that are really in bad condition. Hence, my theory of treating the athlete as a patient, we went out and set to prove, and now we needed to take this to the marketplace. We needed to help educate people that it's not just about protein. We needed to educate the youth that they have alternatives. They're all legitimate compounds out there that will work, that have good data that they should be on. And that the health concerns of the athlete were more than just focusing entirely on muscle wasting, which the entire marketplace, when you walked into the franchises, were just dealing with. Protein and caffeine, and stimulants. That's what they were doing. So, what we set out to do for Blue Bonnet, they called me to consult and they said, help us build a legitimate line of products for the athlete. Help us bring sports nutrition back to the health food store where it belongs, not into franchise stores that are focusing on banned substances, stimulants, and excess protein. And I said, well, we have to obviously get the best-selling products that are out there that everybody wants. They want something to take before they work out, they want something they can take during their workout, and they need something to take after their workout. The most popular being the pre-workout formula, and here it's a mixture of very important muscle drivers. You've got creatine in the formula, you've got branched-chain amino acids in the 4:1:1 ratio. You've got beta-alanine in here, and I didn't talk much about beta-alanine, but beta-alanine is an important compound that helps to reduce the acidity in muscle. Remember, you're doing a lot of work, your muscle fatigues, lactic acid, lots of acids being produced. That acidity slows your muscle down. Beta-alanine acts as a buffer. And then we added a little bit of caffeine. Enough caffeine in 1 to 2 cups of coffee, which is not a lot and ideal. It wasn't like the massive amounts found in other formulas. We also added arginine and I added citrulline. Because arginine breaks down from that enzyme called arginase, citrulline can raise arginine levels better than giving arginine alone. So I like to kind of mix it up a little bit. Some arginine will work efficiently, but citrulline will keep that going much more efficiently. And is not affected by the arginase enzyme. This is a product you take half hour, 45 minutes before the activity, and it helps to push more energy into muscle. It helps the muscle prepare for more work to be done. And the caffeine being a little bit of an energy driver, it's a little bit of a touchy-feely product because of the caffeine, what have you. But again, nothing too significant that you have to worry about tachycardia and arrhythmias that you get with products that are in that 400 to 600 milligram of caffeine range, which I would not recommend to anyone. During your workout, instead of guzzling down Gatorade and Powerade that is just loaded with fructose and sugar, and fructose being one of the worst sugars you can give, there is a study done in athletes where when you give fructose, it raises oxidative stress, so it's the worst sugar to give. We decided to put together a complex mixture of varying chain lengths of carbohydrate and not just dump in sugar. Yes, there are simple sugars in here, like D-ribose, which is important for the heart, but some brown rice powder, some steel-cut oat powder, maltodextrin, waxy maize. So you have varying chain lengths of carbohydrate. And then we said, well, how do we help the body use those carbohydrates? We added in lipoic acid, cinnamon extract, which is real important to help stabilize the body's, the cell's ability to take glucose in, and chromium, an important player in potentiating the action of insulin. So we put in these glucose control supporters because we're giving glucose. And so rather than just giving sugar and water, here we have a fluctuating stacked carbohydrate blend with some important players that help your body use those carbohydrates efficiently. This is a product you dump into your water bottle, you sip on it, and this is really important for the endurance athletes or endurance activities greater than an hour, or you're sweating a lot. And then finally, and to me, the most important product here is the post-workout recovery beverage. Obviously, the damage to the muscle is significant, and we have muscle maintenance compounds in here with intact protein, and we use whey protein here. And we use a certain ratio, 3:1, of protein to carbohydrate, carbohydrate to protein ratio. This has been well established in the literature to get the greatest rise in muscle protein synthesis and recovery when you back up some protein with some carbohydrate. And we added the waxy maize and maltodextrin. We add a little bit of creatine because the case can be made, creatine being important for building muscle as well as recovering after the damage. We threw in glutamine, again, branched chain amino acids having both pre and post recovery importance. And then we added for cellular hydration the major important electrolytes, calcium, magnesium, sodium, and potassium on top of that. This is the start of what we feel a legitimate, safe line of products that can be used from the high school athlete on up. One of the most important things that you need to know, that every single batch of the Extreme Edge line goes to a company called NSF to be certified for sport. NSF was the assigned certification organization by NFL sports and all the other major athletic associations, that if they were going to purchase products for their athletes, it had to be NSF certified. What does NSF do? Every time we produce a batch, they take random samples and they send it out to labs to test for all the banned substances that are on the World Anti-Doping Association list, the U.S. Olympic Committee list, and the NCAA list. And if they find anything in there, it gets rejected, and you'll never see this on the product. Every one of the labels will have this insignia on there. This is to assure quality and safety for you, some of you as parents, and some of you as athletes, that there will not be anything in here that if they ever took your test, that it would account for this product, you know, attributing to that problem. There are no banned substances in the product. And that's a major feat for the company. So, with that said, I will end the discussion here. Again, my intent was to help educate you through the mass of misinformation that's been perpetrated in this area for the longest time. I wanted you to also understand that muscle isn't the only objective for clinicians, strength conditioning coaches, or athletes themselves that they need to be concerned with when they're involved in strenuous activity. I need you to understand the mantra: perform better, gotta recover better. The mantra: the athlete should be treated like a patient. The mantra: that exercise is a stressor that does damage to the body, not too different than certain diseases, what they do to the body. Then and only then could you really appreciate how to truly help the athlete. The book doesn't just talk about these. I cover a lot of other compounds, and then there are chapters on actual diet. The diet is the most important. How to regulate the influx of certain nutritional components, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats in your diet. What's the right timing? How to space that out. Is the diet for the bodybuilder the same for the football player, the same for the cyclist? And the answer is obviously not. There are calculations in there to show you really how to calculate A, your caloric needs, and B, how to calculate the right amount of protein, carbohydrate, and fat for your body. So dietary concerns are in there. Nutritional concerns and supplements that I've covered tonight in much greater detail. The story about steroids and how bad they are for you, and the case in the beginning of why I look at the athlete as a patient, that I relate to the studies that are out there of the damage that's been that we see going on in the body. And so with that said, I hope you leave with that kind of appreciation that you can help others as well as yourselves. And with that, I thank you for coming tonight. Appreciate it. Any questions? Yeah.
You're on your post-workout formula.
Yep.
Is there a specific ratio of protein to carbohydrate? I noticed the carbohydrate was pretty low.
It was a 3-to-1 ratio in the formula, but a lot of people don't want a lot of sugars. And for these formulas, that was enough carbohydrate to give. I'd rather them take the rest of the carbohydrates as food, and I want them to eat. This is the formula you take within that half hour after activity. I don't want people to certainly eat a meal. It takes too long to digest. This was supposed to be real simple, easy to digest, get into the body, get it working on recovering fast. Then you go home, you shower, whatever, and have a great meal. So I wasn't so concerned about putting in 60 to 100 grams of carbohydrate in here. I needed something just really quick and easy. Otherwise, that would cause more water retention, and it would slow down the release of all these nutrients, and we needed to make this thing really quick and easy to get into the body. But the 3-to-1 ratio of carbohydrates to protein is the best for recovery in terms of muscle protein synthesis. Then what you do with your diet afterwards kind of covers really the macronutrients that you need to cover. And I'd rather do that than dump it into a container, because the amount of carbohydrate and other protein needs that you have need to be gotten from other food, from foods, rather than supplements. Yes?
Does creatine have a continued effect at the same level over time, and do you have to cycle on and off?
What the thing was, in the very early stages, they used to talk about first saturating the tissue, and they want you to take 20 grams for a couple of days and then bring it down to like 5 grams. Then we looked at some studies of long-term use, 6 to 12 months, of 2 to 3 grams a day, having the same kind of effect of trying to just load the body and taking high doses, coming off, load the body. So you could do any one of two things. The fact that I'm seeing so much data coming out now on the use of creatine in the elderly, forget disease states. As the elderly, they break down muscle very easy, and it's hard for them to keep muscle. Taking it regularly, just two, three grams a day would be ideal. I kind of like the smaller chronic administration than the shorter high, you know, dose administration effects, especially if you're someone who's athletic all year round. For those who need to kind of gain and they're trying to push for the season, then I could see doing the dosing and doing higher doses, shorter periods, and cycling it that way better. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
You mentioned the 2000 and how it's also on the CD I got sponsored by Yogi. Now, is he, this part of that we're talking about, the
yeah, it's the Blue Bonnet Extreme Edge line.
Blue Bonnet, and they, and Joe Thadman endorsed this as well.
No, I didn't say that. First of all, I'm a consultant for Blue Bonnet. I'm in a variety of areas in medicine and what have you. And Joe Theismann got involved in a company that I was involved in making products for the medical marketplace for oncology. When I started to do this work, he was an investor of the company. He came to me and he said, "Wow, I'm doing all this work with high school athletes. We're trying to get the word out to them." And I said, "That's great, Joe. I'm writing a book. Why don't you write it forward and we can help get the word out even better? Because I'm nobody. You can get the, you know, your name on the book would be wonderful." So he's endorsed what I'm saying in this book, which from this book, I've now developed products for Blue Bonnet. Joe doesn't endorse products, and I technically don't endorse products. I've developed them. And I have to have that third party out of the way. So I'm not an employee of Blue Bonnet, which is a good thing. I don't think you would want somebody, the vice president of Blue Bonnet or the marketer of Blue Bonnet, coming up here to talk to you about this tonight. I do products for the medical marketplace primarily. The only company I do products for in the health food trade is Blue Bonnet, and it's the only company I would because of who they are and what they do. They manufacture their own materials. They don't use third-party manufacturers. They have a laboratory that tests incoming raw materials to finished products, which is the way you should be doing it. And they've been doing this a long time ago. They didn't have to wait for the FDA to mandate, as they did only a couple of years ago with good manufacturing practice. They've been doing this. And so, in a sense, I develop conceptually for them. I tell them what the right combinations and justify it and show them the data and what have you. And in a sense, then I endorse that. But you know, Joe doesn't endorse products at all. Yeah. Yeah.
As it relates to like the post-exercise testosterone to cortisol ratio, obviously I'm sure that's
related to intensity of
absolutely
of exercise, but assuming it's under, you know, in the heat, the most intense conditions, as far as the dosing on things like the rhodiola, phosphatidylserine, vitamin C, what have you seen that would be considered adequate in the absolute most extreme condition? I've read things that seem to be fairly extreme dosages, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, and I'll tell you why. As much as you've seen that, some of the studies coming out that concern me when people go to that level are the studies that show, well, maybe you shouldn't be providing so much. Maybe you should let the body do what it's got to do. And there is that fine line where an antioxidant may be contradictory to what is going on with the body. It's an adaptive phase. You have to let the body adapt. Everybody in this room will adapt differently at a different rate depending upon what they do. And so, and I've always, that's why I like, you know, when the creatine question, I like small doses, more chronic administration, rather than high doses where I'm interfering with the body's own adaptive nature that's going on. And the question was raised, if you lower cortisol so fast and so much, well, you're not letting the body then adapt, because that rise in cortisol, that rise in antioxidants, that rise in inflammation triggers off other things in the body to start its own defenses. And you want that to happen.
I guess that would be a second part of the question.
Yeah.
Doing what you're talking about with those nutrients.
I use low doses. I don't go to therapeutic levels in that case. Not unless it warrants that, and it really depends on the biochemistry of the individual. But for the vast majority of people, I don't have to go to extreme high dose therapeutic levels of all these things. And when I show the antioxidants, and I only named a few, there's probably another 20 I could have put up on the board: pine bark extract, grapeseed extract, there's so many of them. I mean, I would hand pick a, you know, two or three and put a regular normal low daily dose as part of their just what they do on a daily basis, not necessarily what I have to dump into a post recovery product. So yeah, I get concerned with down regulating the body's own ability to do what it's got to do when you're going way too high on things. Same thing with the protein story. You go to 70, 80 grams of protein, and did you do more good? No, you probably did damage, because you now let the body start focusing on oxidizing, metabolizing protein, which is causing more oxidation, and at a time when you're already producing a lot of oxidants. It's almost contradictory to do, and why we look at the fine line. And for the fine line, that 30 gram protein was enough to kind of gently stimulate protein synthesis without going to a level where it becomes negative. So I think at some point, and again, until the data is published, it's hard, but in speculating to see what I see coming out, where too high of antioxidants may not be the best thing. And that's why I go to low. And that's true, and we saw this decades ago with the carrot and finish study. This was a study done where they took smokers that smoked for 30 years and they gave them beta carotene, and they wanted to see if it was going to help. It was the most asinine, ridiculous study you can imagine, but we learned something from it, because what came out of it was that the smokers who took high doses of beta carotene developed more cancers than the people who didn't. What we learned from there is simple. High doses of any good nutrient, what they did was, when you give high amounts of beta carotene, you interfere or hamper the absorption of the other carotenes, like lycopene, lutein, the other xanthans. Those carotenoids are more powerful anti-cancer agents than beta carotene. So now you decrease the absorption of these other more powerful carotenoids, you did more damage to these people. in a sense, and that was a ridiculous study, but this is the way medicine looks at even nutritional science. The single magic bullet, give a high dose of this nutrient, and invariably, every one of these studies that get published are all negative, because they go about it all the wrong way. A, you don't have to go to that high dose, and B, how about the rest of the family? How about looking at nutrition as no single magic bullet? There are none. You have to bring the family of all these things in place. So that's where we're moving today with, you know, a lot of the antioxidant formulas have fruit and vegetable extracts in it. We spike a lot of our now multiples with fruit and vegetable extracts that have the whole family of all these things in there rather than focusing on a single nutrient. And I don't think anybody should focus on any single nutrient for any condition. So, but that's the way nutritional science should be applied, that any condition you have has multiple pathways. No one nutrient can address all the pathways, so you have to use as many as you can to cover all the bases. And that's what we've learned over several decades. But, you know, when you look at the classical sciences, physics, chemistry, what have you, that date back so long, nutritional science is a little over 100 years old. We're learning something every day. And I had a nice conversation with Ed and Jim about one of the projects I'm involved in, which I am hoping to get to the marketplace in a relatively soon, short period of time, the non-psychoactive cannabinoids found in an herb that belongs and needs to be understood, and that's cannabis. I'm not talking about THC, gets you stoned, although it's a powerful neuroprotective agent. It's treating epilepsy, seizures, neuroprotective, killing cancer cells. The research coming out now on cannabinoids is mind-boggling. And we're now, with hydroponic growers, growing and extracting cannabinoids for medicinal uses that are not psychoactive, that belong with things like echinacea and CoQ10 to treat either neurological or immune-related disorders. A lot of good stuff going on, but it's such a young science, and we're learning something every day, and that's what makes it exciting. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any studies on joint builders or anti-inflammatories in the joint?
Yeah, the best thing for joint, and I know, again, another misinformation that everybody goes to the glucosamine and chondroitin. That's great for cartilage, but they forgot the surrounding tissue around cartilage that is equally damaged and needs support, and that's collagen. So if you're going to deal with any joint issues, you do the things that are chondroprotective, glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, and then you start to add in those nutrients that build collagen. Hyaluronic acid, intact collagen now, and there's different collagens. There's types 1, 2, and 3. 1 and 3 are for collagen, and type 2 is for cartilage. So you should get all three in there. Lysine, proline, vitamin C cofactors, silica. When you give me that kind of formula, that's when you repair the best. And I have hands-on experience of that, being in martial arts for 30 years. 2 years ago, I threw a kick. I kicked for a million times, came down, entirely split my Achilles tendon. Probably one of the worst injuries you can have. It's typically a year, cast, boot, rehabilitate, exercise, and I cut my recovery time by a third. And the orthopedic surgeon says, that was fantastic. What did you do? And I kind of went over the protocol, and he says, you know, he didn't, you know, they don't know. You know, I'm talking, it's like me talking to a child. I mean, and I don't mean that in a negative way. All my friends are physicians, and all my books are written with physicians. But he didn't really understand all that much. He understood some of the chemistry, but it works. And it works with patients that I've worked with, and including athletes. So you got to do both. Don't focus on just cartilage.
What would be a good product with that? Turmeric?
Yeah, well, he brings up a very important point. Again, if I had to treat someone, if I looked at the tissue, I just focused now on cartilage and collagen. What damaged that tissue is causing oxidative stress, and inflammation. So along with my chondroprotective agents, my collagen-building agents, I want to give anti-inflammatories, curcumin being one very good one, Boswellia, 5-loxin being another, Perloxan from hops, another. There's a lot of good anti-inflammatories and a couple of antioxidants with it, or a nice green drink with it that has natural antioxidants in them. So that's the way I think, and as I said, different pathways. Damaged tissue, cartilage, secondary tissue, collagen, inflammation, oxidation, I got to deal with that for recovery.
So it's several problems.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say, but that's the most effective way to deal with, in that case, that issue. Because what's causing all that swelling and everything? You got inflammatory markers left and right. You got damaged tissue, oxidation. You want to help the body clear that tissue out of all that debris so it could really, really heal better. And then you use the external techniques from acupuncture to laser therapy, which is phenomenal. It stimulates healing tremendously. You use whatever you can externally. And I mean, I came out of surgery in my cast, and I was in the gym the next day. You can't let it bother you, because it's all up here, too. Crutches and all. My friends helped me. So, any other questions? Yeah?
Have you studied any polysaturated
glycoaminoglycans? Yeah, the glycosaminoglycans are in a lot of these collagen cartilage matrices, so they're naturally inherently found in the collagen products, the glucosamines. They're all important for the buildup, so they're part of the whole matrix, and you need the whole family there. So these GAGs, they're all very important. They're found in the hyaluronic acid materials, the collagen types 1, 2, and 3 materials, and in the glucosamine chondroitin material as well. Yeah, they're all important. All right. I appreciate your time and effort coming out. I know it's a nice day. You don't need to be here. Thank you for coming. Thank you.
Two things we have to give away.